Hi, this is Bobby Hardy with the News Gazette on December 6, 2019. Today we'll start with the cover story, Concerns Aired on Achievement Gaps. Letter from local NAACP chapters details proficiency chasm between races. Is that of Champaign. Two civil rights groups are challenging the Champaign School District to address racial disparities in student achievement and discipline 10 years after the Unit 4 was released from federal oversight. The American Civil Liberties Union of Champaign County and the Champaign County NAACP released a letter Thursday saying they were, quote, deeply concerned about growing disparities in the district since the federal consent decree to improve racial equality ended in 2009. A decade later, we would expect to find significant improvement. Instead, tragically for the students and the families of Champaign, the situation has deteriorated, said the letter from ACLU President Carol Spindle and NAACP President Minnie Pearson. The disparity in English language and math proficiency has widened to a chasm, their letter said, citing data showing just 8% of black children in Unit 4 schools are proficient in English language arts and 6% are proficient in math, compared to the 47% and 49% for white children. Proficiency rates for black students in Champaign are roughly half the rate for black children statewide, according to the 2018 data from the Illinois State Board of Education, they said. In Champaign, white students are also 7.1 times more likely to take advanced placement classes in high school than black students, the letter noted, comparing with much lower ratios in Urbana, much lower ratios in Urbana, 2.4, Illinois as a whole, 1.9, and nationwide, it's 1.8. The group's blamed poor access to gifted education for black students at the elementary level as a possible factor. Black children are seriously underrepresented in Unit 4's gifted programs compared with white and Asian students, according to information presented in August to the Education Equality Excellence Committee, a panel created under the 2009 settlement agreement to review data on race and ethnicity, student academic progress, discipline rates, and graduation rates. Our goal is not to reduce access for those groups, but to understand why black students are underrepresented and how this disparity can be remedied to benefit all Champaign students, the letter said. The groups urge the district to collect clearer data on gifted programs to ensure that it doesn't contribute to resegregation and disparities in educational outcomes. In terms of discipline, black students were 5.5 times more likely to be suspended than white students in 2009, according to a federal monitoring report at the time, the letter noted. Last year, that number had grown to 8.7, based on data from the Education Equality Excellence Committee, the letter said. The groups plan to address their concerns at Monday's school board meeting. We know that Unit 4 has attempted to improve racial equity, but it is clear to both organizations that more efficient measures must be implemented without delay. Superintendent Susan Zola has already responded to the authors and indicated that district officials would be happy to discuss those issues, spokesperson John Leday said Thursday afternoon. It's a very thoughtful letter. We take it very seriously and look forward to having a discussion, Leday said. Subtitle, Need a New Plan. Pearson said the groups are willing to work with the district on anything we can do to enhance these test scores and to improve the district's report card, too, because this is so important. She has talked with administrators about the problems before and said they're always willing to listen. But there needs to be effort to put into it. It needs to be measurable. If something is not right and you assess what it is, then what mechanisms are put in place to ensure that it improves? It needs to be everyone working for that vision. 10 years ago, the school district made a promise and they said they had a plan, Spindle said. The numbers show either they didn't have a plan or it didn't work. So clearly we need a new plan. and the process to develop that plan needs to be transparent and needs to include genuine community input and regular reporting back to the community on progress made. The consent decree resulted from a civil rights lawsuit brought against the district and aimed to reduce racial disparities in achievement, discipline, assignment to special education, and participation in gifted classes, among other areas. It was getting us to a place where there was communication, collaboration between grade levels, all teachers were on the same page. Parents were being included in their children's education. Children were given the extra opportunity, depending on their ability or disability, to perform at their level and feel good about the progress that they were making, she said. But not everyone bought into the program, Pearson said, and she feared the gains might be reversed once it was lifted. She's not sure if federal oversight is needed again. Subtitle: High Expectations. The school district needs to work with students, parents, teachers, and community members to do whatever is necessary to make sure children achieve and everyone is working for the same outcome, she said. As possible remedies, she said, the district should place its strongest teachers in schools with the greatest need, those who are trained to work with children of diverse backgrounds, and meeting them where they are, and having high expectations is so important. There are children who should be in the gifted or enriched programs who are not making it into those programs because those expectations are not there for those students, Pearson said. Pearson said she understands that students bring serious behavioral and mental health challenges to the classroom. I know there are wonderful teachers, but they are just not prepared to work with the children that we have today, she said. And sometimes students are a little bit difficult. But you have to understand you're a teacher in a public school and you need to wrap around not only the child, but the parent and where they come from. You have to understand the baggage that they're bringing, not to let anyone get away with what they shouldn't be getting away with, but they should follow the rules that keep everyone safe. But to understand where the children come culturally is also important. That ends the first story on the cover. We'll move on to a second story. Entitled Online Transactions Need a Spot to Safely Swap, UI has another Always Open Lobby at Police Station Available. This is out of Urbana. With the increasing frequency of sales between strangers via social media comes the inevitable increase in those who want to get something for nothing. The University of Illinois Police want buyers and sellers alike to be safe in those transactions. On November 16th, a UI student became a victim when he arranged to sell a laptop computer to someone online. They met outside Granger Engineering Library, 1301 West Springfield Avenue in Urbana, coincidentally just a couple of blocks west of the police station, and the seller handed the computer to a man sitting in a car, expecting to have payment handed back. The would-be buyer drove off with the man's computer. We know that our students are using the online marketplace to buy and sell valuable items for cash, said UI Police Chief Craig Stone. We want to offer a service to keep our students safe. If those transactions are happening in person, it is important to meet in a public place to deter crime. Stone said the lobby of the police department at 1110 West Springfield Avenue is a great place to make those exchanges. Our lobby is open 24 hours a day, and we're equipped with security cameras, but the most valuable piece is, if you're communicating with someone who has bad intentions, the mere suggestion of, hey, let's meet at the police department, can discourage that person from doing whatever they have in mind, said Pat Wade, UI police spokesman. It's something we've been doing for as long as I can remember. We want to make people aware we have this service. In November of 2018, Champaign Police made available two brightly lit parking spaces close to their building on North First Street for marketplace traders to swap items. Lieutenant Bruce Ramsier said he sees the area getting regular use. We don't monitor it. It's open 24/7 and it is recorded, he said. I want to stress that it's not a guarantee your transaction is 100% legitimate or 100% safe. We do record it with our building security camera, he said, explaining that if something bad did happen, there would be a record. Those exchanging items for cash are also welcome to go into the lobby, but police are not there to verify the authenticity of merchandise, Ramsmeyer said. Wade said UI police don't intend to get involved in the transactions, but are there as a backup if needed. They ask that people using their small lobby for swaps alert the front desk clerk about their intention. He and Stone also remind buyers and sellers to check the profile of someone they plan to meet if possible. Ideally, you should try to confirm the person's identity before you arrange to make the sale to make sure that they are who they say they are. If someone's profile looks suspicious or questionable for any reason, it may not be a good idea to proceed with the sale, Wade said. Meetings should always take place in a well-lit, high traffic, and preferably an area equipped with security cameras. The cover picture on the News Gazette today has a title called Secure Purchase. Willow Jackson 6 of Champaign wears police Urbana Police Sergeant Cortez Gardner's coat as she shows him a toy Thursday while participating in Shop with a Cop at Farm and Fleet in Urbana. Sergeant Zach McAuliffe said the event, now in its 28th year, was able to provide $150 to each of 98 children to get presents for themselves. It is funded by private donations. The last cover story is about Champaign's Daniel Romanchuk. He's good as gold. Tokyo Paralympics' next big thing for world's best racer. Calculating the differences in time zones, let alone regulating his sleep, became a dizzying experience for Daniel Romanchuk over 3 weeks following the New York City Marathon on November 3rd. After winning in New York, his sixth straight victory in the four traditional major marathons, he headed to Dubai for the wheelchair track world championships, jumping 9 time zones. When he took off to Ota, Japan, where he went forward another 4 hours and took part in the OT International Wheelchair Marathon. On Monday, he went back 15 hours when he finally returned home to Champaign. "I went full circle," he said with a laugh. The heavy travel and grueling racing schedule was by design. Next August, he'll head back to Japan for the 2020 Tokyo Paralympics, where he'll likely be favored to win multiple gold medals in events that could range from the 400 meters to the marathon. In addition to its locale being just outside of Tokyo, the marathon in Japan approximated the marathon at the Paralympics, which happens after track races are finished. "This was sort of a test run, you could say, with the games coming up," he said. "How does all of the time difference and scheduling work, and how do I feel with all of the events? So this was kind of a big test, you could say." For Romanchuk, every experience on the track against high-level competition is valuable. His marathon dominance and world records in the 800 and 5,000 aside, he's still young and relatively inexperienced at 21 years old. The top two finishers in the 5,000 meters at the World Championships, for instance, were 37-year-old Pawat Wahorma and 33-year-old Marcel Hug. Hug, who dominated the wheelchair marathon circuit before Romanchuk came along, didn't win his first of 12 until he was 25. While his marathon wins and world records make the case that he's the fastest wheelchair racer in the world, winning multiple golds at the Paralympics is far from a given. Wheelchair races on the track, where space is at a premium, are more of a practice in tactics than road races. A racer like Romanchuk can lead for an entire race, but an athlete strategically saving energy by drafting can pull ahead and win during the final stretch. In Dubai, Romanchuk won the 800 meters but finished 5th in the 1500 and 4th in the 5000. In Ottawa, he finished 3rd, 4 seconds behind Hug, the winner. "When you get into that mix with those guys," Coach Adam Bleakney said, "you have to be in the right position and you have to do everything right. You can run the 5000 8 times and you can have 8 different winners." There's also the matter of travel accommodations. Romanchuk is used to traveling with his own routine, along with his mother Kim, who acts as his manager. He eats his own simple diet and generally makes his own travel arrangements. At the Paralympics, he'll stay in the Olympic Village and his accommodations will be managed. The World Championships gave him a similar experience. Bleakney has coached world-class marathoners at Illinois since 2005, but in benchmark workouts, Romanchuk is in a category of his own. On the marathon circuit, he's already proven himself a generational talent, even though the even-keeled Parkland College student would never talk about himself in such glowing terms. While the 2020 Paralympics won't be his first, he was 18 last time around and had little hope of medaling. For the first time, he has a chance to make his mark with a few gold medals at the highest level possible. Now it's time to take a break from competition for the winter and gear up for a busy year ahead. It's an important training block headed into the games here, he said. Right now, the year is done. We have a plan for how things are going to go, but we'll still be planning over the next few months. We're going to go ahead and move on to the local section. Tuscola Celebration, new to festival, trolley rides. This is out of Tuscola. Why wait till December 25th? Tuscola is celebrating the holiday in a big way this weekend with its annual Christmastown Festival. The Douglas County City's downtown is decorated with a giant stack of Christmas presents and snowflakes on the light poles, and activities for all ages, mostly free, are planned for today evening through Sunday afternoon. Tonight will include an arts and crafts vendor fair with food served from 4 to 8 p.m. at the Tuscola Community Building. The vendor fair will continue Saturday from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. Also being offered from 6 to 8 p.m. today will be free trolley rides throughout downtown with possible stops on streets with light displays, according to Tuscola Public Library Director Devin Black. He and the library staff are coordinating the rides, which will depart from the corner of Main and Sales Streets with Christmas karaoke and games planned. His wife, Michelle, will assume the role of Mrs. Claus and will be either outdoors or riding aboard the trolley reading Christmas stories. The trolley rides are a new twist this year. Carriage rides were offered in past events, Devin Black said, and organizers wanted to try something new this year. There are more activities planned for the weekend. Today, 6 to 8, ornament making and pictures with Santa downtown at the Design Studio, 107 West Sales Street. Saturday, 8 a.m., Santa Claus Chase Race, a 5K run/walk. Registration begins at 7:15 at the Community Building. 8 to 11 a.m., Breakfast with Santa, Douglas County Museum, 700 South Main Street. 11 a.m., Christmas Parade. Lineup begins at 10:30 a.m. at Irvin Park. 11:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m., Pictures with Santa at the Community Building. 1:30 p.m., Free Family Christmas Trivia Contest and Crafts at the Library at 112 East Sale Street. 9 a.m. to 3 p.m., Santa Paws Pet Pictures, Jarman Center, 704 North Main Street. On Sunday, 1 to 5 p.m., the GFWC Tuscola Women's Club Holiday House Walk. Tickets at Smith House, 400 South Main Street. And from 1 to 5 p.m., Bake and Craft Sale, U.S. Department of Agriculture Building, 900 South Washington Street. Also on the cover of the local section, the Clergy Corner. Service with a smile and then some. This is out of Rantoul. A Rantoul church, in partnership with a local car dealership, is helping women of the congregation with their car maintenance. Once a month, men of Christian Life Church meet at Shields Auto Center, where the employees of the business change the oil of women who have signed up for the service. Afterward, volunteers from the church wash their vehicles. And it's all at no charge. Joy Harden of Rantoul is one of those who benefits from the service and said it is a big help. It's a wonderful service. I really appreciate all that they do for us, said Harden, who has taken her car in for the past 2 years. Church member Al Vogelsang heads to the Christian Life Oil Change Ministry. It's all for single women who attend our church over the age of 18. We have a pool of 73 women in our fellowship, Vogelsang said. The male volunteers perform the service from 8 a.m. to noon the third Saturday of each month at Shields. The volunteers work in two-hour shifts with six men in a shift. There are also two volunteers who sit with the women in the customer lounge to talk with them and pray with them if they want prayer, Vogelsang said. We partner with Shields. They do the oil change. They give us a great deal, Vogelsang said. In addition to a car wash, the church volunteers clean the interior of the vehicle. They get more excited about their clean car than they do about the oil change, Vogelsang said. Men of all ages take part, ranging from their teens to older than 70. What's interesting about this is not part of our church budget, but it's financed by men of the church, Vogelsang said. Christian Life isn't the first church in the country to provide such a service, but he said many churches do it once or twice a year in their parking lots. Vogelsang said the employees of Shield go above and beyond, checking the cars while servicing them and pointing out any problems. They will say, "You might have an issue with your brakes," or whatever, Vogelsang said. "We have had several of those. One woman's mirror was falling off. Another woman had to disconnect her battery every night. It was an electrical problem. Somebody paid for that one, too. There was a $700 bill, and a guy paid for it. They're a great partner with us," he said of Shields. The last cover story on the local section, the health reporter is in. Each week, longtime health reporter Deb Pressing answers questions on our website. A complete transcript is available at news-gazette.com. The question, how did Illinois stack up in the American Lung Association new state-by-state look at lung cancer? Illinois had one of the highest survival rates for lung cancer among states, but also a higher rate of lung cancer cases. Lung cancer is still one of the deadliest cancers, but the survival rate at 5 years after diagnosis has improved. Nationally, the survival rate at 5 years after diagnosis stands at 21.7%, compared to a 17.2% a decade ago, according to the Lung Association. Still, about 228,000 new lung cancer cases are projected for this year, with the lowest number of new cases occurring in Utah and the highest number in Kentucky, according to the report released in November. The main risk for lung cancer remains smoking, but there are other reasons people get this disease: exposure to secondhand smoke, radon gas, and air pollution. Some of what can help make a difference: radon testing and mitigation, healthy air protections, tobacco tax increases that reduce the smoking rate, smoke-free laws, and access to services to help quit smoking. One of the reasons lung cancer has such a poor survival rate is that it's often caught in later stages after it's spread. A low-dose CT scan for people at higher risk for lung cancer has been advised since 2013, but just over 4% of those eligible were screened last year, according to the Lung Association. Here are some of the findings for Illinois. The rate of new lung cancer cases, 65 per 100,000 people, the 35th highest lung cancer incident rate in the U.S., with the nation rate being 59.6 per 100,000. 5-year survival rate, 23.8%, the 8th best among states. Cases caught early, 21.8%, falling in the average range among states. CT screening for lung cancer, a bit better than the national average, with a 4.4% for those eligible to be screened. Lack of treatment, 12.6% of cases in the state aren't treated, compared to the 15.4% nationally. Surgery, 21% of cases in the state are treated with surgery, compared to 20.6% nationally. We'll turn to a story out of Springfield. Federal SNAP work required. New food stamp rule may cut off 140,000 in state. Again, this is out of Springfield. The Trump administration is about to impose new regulations that would tighten eligibility rules for the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, also known as food stamps, in a way state officials say could cut off benefits for an estimated 140,000 Illinoisans. The new rules apply to a category of SNAP recipients aged 18 to 59 known as able-bodied adults without dependents, or ABAWDs. Currently, those who meet the program's income eligibility limits are limited to 3 months of benefits during any 36-month period unless they work at least 20 hours a week or are enrolled in a training program. Those conditions were part of a 1996 welfare reform law passed during the Clinton administration. But the law also allows states to waive the work requirements if the applicant lives in an area marked by high unemployment or where there are a lack of sufficient jobs. The new rules, which will take effect in April, will tighten the regulations governing those waivers by limiting them to counties with unemployment rates above 6%. The U.S. Department of Agriculture, which administers the program, said in a document published this week that about half of all able-bodied adults receiving SNAP live in areas that have received waivers despite low unemployment levels across the majority of the country. But Democratic Governor J.B. Pritzker blasted the new rules, calling them cruel and suggesting they are being enacted for other political purposes. President Trump is now resorting to the ugliest possible tactics to distract the American people from his impeachment and gin up support from the far right, denying food to the most vulnerable people in our society, Pritzker said in an email statement. This is cruel, and my administration has fought him at every turn. Still in the local section, the University YMCA fundraising campaign exceeds goal. This is out of Champaign. The University YMCA has raised almost $1.5 million through its Transforming Lives, Connecting Communities fund drive, exceeding its $1.2 million goal. But the organization is extending the campaign to January 31st, hoping to fund the addition of solar panels to its 82-year-old building at 1001 South Wright Street in Champaign, and expand interfaith programming in honor of former executive director Steve Shoemaker. The drive has brought in more than $1.47 million in pledges since the September 2018 kickoff. The money raised will go towards three major goals: tackling needed building renovations, strengthening programs, and increasing the Y's endowment. The University Y has set up a GoFundMe campaign to raise the rest of the money needed to install solar panels on the building at a cost of $22,000 after rebates and incentives. Two alumni have pledged up to $11,000 by matching all contributions of more than $100, but the Y still needs $7,000 more in pledges to reach its goal, Executive Director Mike Doyle said. Adding solar power will put the University Y one step closer to its goal of making the building LEED certified, said Board Chair Cassie Carroll. The organization has been home to environmental activism in the community for more than 50 years, she said. The University Y is also exploring a gift to honor the contributions of Shoemaker, director from 1999 to 2008. He played an important role in expanding the interfaith work here, including the monthly First Tuesday Interfaith Dialogues, Doyle said. Founded in 1873, the University Y is the oldest nonprofit in Champaign County. With that, we're going to wrap up the first half hour. I'll join you again for the second half hour. Thanks.